Wait, what's your costume?
Dean from Supernatural.
I don't know what that is.
I know.
Oh my god.
You said you're a baseball player?
Yeah, I'm gonna be that again.
Nice.
Just because I fucking bought the pants for like $70 last year. So I'm kind of like... I'm between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. My decision is gonna be, do I wear sunglasses with my pimp costume or not?
You should.
Indoors at night.
Yeah. Dude, what the heck?
Yeah.
Is that even a question?
Yeah, you know what? That was a stupid question.
Dumbass. All right, welcome to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined by two excellent co-hosts of mine, Nick and Joe Berger. Guys, it's been a little while that we've been in the studio, but you know, it's a nice rainy day in Northern California, so what better excuse to get back indoors?
Exactly, and just it starts raining just as you're getting ready to leave.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, are you a rain guy? Are you cuddle weather guy?
I love the rain.
Okay.
Mainly because even when it rains here, it's more of a mist.
Yeah, it's not
like it hardly ever pours here.
It's not a torrential downpour.
Like you could walk through it for like 5 minutes and get back inside and just be a little damp.
Yeah, and especially the rain lately has been like, it doesn't rain for more than an hour at a time, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I literally was walking outside at work, like going to lunch. And there was, like, one raindrop that fell and hit me, like, in the face.
Well, what hit me in the face this morning when I woke up at, like, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Hampus Lindholm,
segue,
dear friend of the show, has re-signed with the Anaheim Ducks, $31.5 million, six-year deal. The Ducks have locked up their man, their top defenseman, only 22 years of age, will be averaging $5.25 million a year. Which is kind of incredible considering how good he is. His numbers are comparable to, if not better, than Aaron Ekblad, who makes $7.5 million a year. I guess we'll just start it off. Initial reactions to the Hampus Lindholm signing.
When I think there was a tweet from Bob McKenzie or someone yesterday.
Someone important.
Someone in the know that said that they were still like $250,000 apart or something, and both sides were firmly dug in. I was like, oh man, it's not gonna happen. Like Lindholm is just gonna wait it out, and it's not gonna happen. And then I woke up this morning and it happened.
It
just seemed like both sides were so staunchly like in place for what they wanted, but it ended up working out, and it made me wonder if Bob Murray knew, if I can just wait this out until like November, Hampus is going to get itchy and just cave in.
Well, there is also that deadline December 1st to get RFA signings done. So they did have a bit of that hanging over their head. Joe, what was your initial reaction when you saw that Lindholm was returning to Anaheim?
Well, I mean, a couple days ago, who got hurt on the Ducks was Stoner.
Who did get hurt? Oh, Simon Dupre. Yeah. And they placed him on long-term injury reserve.
And, you know, once you're placed on a long-term injury reserve, you sort of thought that, you know, if there was only a little bit of a gap between the two sides, that they might reach a deal.
Yeah, and that they did. I think it seems to me that Murray had his way with, you know, Claude Lemieux, Lindholm's agent. I mean, if I think, you know, like you were saying, they were $250,000 apart, and Lindholm ends up signing for less than $5.5 million. I feel like that's a Ducks win as opposed to a Lindholm win. It's great news for the Ducks. They lock up, perhaps. I mean, maybe not their best player right now. I still think Ryan Getzlaf holds that title, but they definitely locked up their future and their present. He's their best defenseman, and their defensive play this season hasn't been good. Their breakout has looked atrocious, and he's one of the very best in the league at breaking the puck out with control. So this is huge for the Ducks, and we'll see if there's any lingering, maybe bad blood from these negotiations. But I think this is overall a win, not for both sides, but certainly for the Ducks.
Yeah,
I don't think there will be anything lingering. These things once they get done tend to, you know, be in the past.
Yeah, and especially I think, you know, Hampus Lindholm. I don't know, maybe this is just a stereotype of mine, but I feel like Swedish people are in general like very mellow. And I mean, I don't know. I've met a lot of Swedish people in my life for whatever reason. And
I've met a lot of Swedish people. They're great people.
They're very mellow. And if you like watch Hampus Lindholm's interviews, he's like very reserved guy. Doesn't seem too fiery. So obviously like this is just me projecting, but I feel like he's maybe not like going to be too upset about this. And you know, like it didn't go to arbitration. It never got to that where literally they're standing there to an arbitrator and you know, your employer is basically making the case why you're not worth this amount of money.
Right.
It never got to that. So I don't think there will be that lingering bad blood, but you never know because there is an agent involved and that can perhaps skew the player's perspective a little bit.
Yeah. And he did use three emojis in his tweet today.
A palm tree, a smiley face, and a sun. Yeah. Hey, those are, man, he's got a mate. He's 22.
Sweet son.
He's 22. He's a multimillionaire. He's going to be playing professional ice hockey in Southern California. I think he lives in Newport Beach. I think I've heard that somewhere. So
your old stomping grounds.
Yeah. So he's in for a good life. I might be a little jealous.
And the Ducks are in for a good life too because they need him pretty badly.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough the other night to get some free tickets to Sharks Ducks at the SAP Center, and I was in the 7th row. Which was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I keep forgetting to ask. How did you like come up on these tickets?
Yeah, it was just a family friend who had some extra tickets from work who couldn't make it. So I went with the family. It was awesome. I mean, that's the closest I've ever sat in an NHL game. And it was like amazing, just like the detail, seeing how fast the game is from that close. I think that sometimes watching it on TV or I guess now on your tablet or your laptop, you kind of underrate how fast these guys are. And when you're up close and personal, it's like, holy crap, this is like, I don't know like how the coaches do it to follow the game. And it almost explains some of the decisions they make sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, the first time I ever sat that close was the three of us went Habs versus Sharks.
Oh, yeah.
Years back.
That was like row 15, something like that.
Yeah. It might have been even a little bit closer than that, but it was right around there. And
yeah.
Dude, you can see their pupils.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, it's amazing how fast it all happens.
Yeah, it was cool, but the funny thing is I got there in time for the second period, and that was the period where the Sharks were shooting on, or I was on the Ducks' side, like their net, and the play was right in front of me the entire time.
San Jose won like every board battle in that game.
Well, it was really hard to watch just as someone who has covered the Ducks for a few years now. I've gotten accustomed to seeing them, you know, be pretty good in their own zone and be good at breaking it out, and up close and personal, I saw that they've really changed everything about the way they exit the zone. It's all chip and chase. It's all hard rims. It's very rare to see them make an actual, like, you know, breakout pass. And the Sharks just ate them up. Like, they never let them get out of their zone. And when they did, they just get right back in. So I guess my two takeaways from that game were that, I guess I have three takeaways. John Gibson, it looks really good.
Yes.
Did you guys watch that game?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Like, San Jose should have won, like, 5-1.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Gibson stood on his head.
Yeah, he made a couple, like, just really nice, like, positional saves, some really nice desperation saves. But ultimately, you know, he had to cave in at some point. But, yeah, the Sharks looked really good. That's one of my takeaways. Gibson looked really good. And, yeah, the Ducks.
Dude, Lindholm to skate out.
They need a quarterback back there because outside of Lindholm and Vatanen at times, they don't really have anyone else who's that like who has that crisp first pass. I think Josh Manson is capable of it, but that's not really his calling card. He's more of the type who defers to like a better puck moving partner, you know, when he has a chance. And then you have Cam Fowler, who's more of a skated out guy, you know, and that's not gonna work out all the time,
right?
Unfortunately.
So Lindholm back in the mix. What are the ideal D pairs?
Well, I think hopefully, you know, from a Ducks perspective, I'm assuming they'd like to see Manson and Lindholm reunited because that was such a good pairing last year. I don't know how good it's going to be now that they're playing under a different system. That remains to be seen. But hopefully, I mean, I think Lindholm's presence will sort of restructure the blue line a little bit better and hopefully take some minutes away from guys like, you know, Cam Fowler and Kevin Bieksa, who are just like playing a lot right now.
Carlisle's been juggling the D pairs.
He has
constantly
quite
right?
a bit. Yeah. Like he's had some really weird ones. I think he's had Fowler with Vatanen at times, which is kind of weird because it's two guys who aren't really the most astute defensively. And then he's had, I think, Manson with Stoner. Oh yeah. And then on the penalty kill in yesterday's game against Nashville, he had Corbin and Holzer with Kevin Bieksa. That's not a good pairing at all, like in any circumstance.
And then where's Theodore fit into all this?
Well, he's back in the AHL now.
Him and Emerson Edom?
Yeah, they sent them down most likely to clear cap space because now with today's signing, the Ducks, I think, are $4 million over the cap. And, you know, they have the extra space created with the LTIR clause with Dupre, but Dupre will be back at some point. So a trade is imminent with the Ducks. I think there's no way around it. Bob Murray has claimed that they will not need to make a trade.
I saw that.
But to me, and, you know, I wrote an article on Saturday, I think, about, you know, the whole Fowler-Lindholm dilemma that we were going through last week before this signing happened. I still think that's real because now Lindholm is in the mix. It seems like Fowler is the guy who gets moved here to me. They're not going to move a forward because they can't. I mean, they scored 6 goals last night, but there doesn't seem to be any goal scoring punch in this lineup, especially when they, because Getzlaf got hurt against San Jose. Don't know when he's going to be back, although I don't think it'll be too long. It seemed like more of a minor injury.
And he came back in the game.
He came, but then he left.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. He thought he might be able to
play. By the way, seeing Ryan Getzlaf in person from the 7th row, that dude is gigantic.
Yeah. Perry and Getzlaf in overtime were horrifying.
They're huge. Like, yeah. It's kind of insane. And then even, like, Ryan Kesler. Like, I would not want to, you know, muck it up in the corners or in front of the net with that guy.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Yeah.
But, I mean, quick side note, that overtime was fun. Even though it was very one-sided.
It felt really short.
It was short. It was extremely one-sided. Anaheim had the puck the entire time until it went into their net.
Yeah.
Thanks to Mark Edward Vlasic.
I mean, that's kind of what happens on 3-on-3 is it's almost like whoever controls it first loses because you get that quick, you know, turnover, and then it's a 2-on-1, and then, you know, it's in the back of your net.
Did you watch the replay on it?
Yeah.
Could Corey Perry skate a little faster? He seemed a little...
Corey Perry is not known for his back checking.
Yeah, he like, that diving play he made, it looked like he was skating to make that play. Like, he looked like he could have, you know, skated a little harder and actually maybe tied up Vlasic a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing happened against the Islanders, their other 3-on-3 game. Like, he let Josh Bailey kind of just, like, skate right by him, so...
Right.
It's okay. I mean, with Corey Perry, you'd like to see more effort, but he makes up for it on the other end of the ice.
Yeah,
he does so much for that team, like, especially with Getzlaf out. He is their only legitimate goal scorer. Yeah,
and, I mean, he almost ended the game because he had the puck right in the slot, sort of dangling it out, and I was like, okay, here it comes.
Yeah.
And then it didn't happen, but he and Getzlaf are just dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. So
breaking news, Getzlaf and Perry, really good.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I think they can't trade a forward. They're gonna have to naturally protect Vatanen and Lindholm for the expansion draft, and then Kevin Bieksa inexplicably has to be protected because of his no movement clause. So then that leaves Cam Fowler as the natural guy you move, because any other guy you would move outside of maybe Clayton Stoner isn't really either. It's not enough cap to move off, or it's not really a valuable asset. Like, what are you really going to get in return for Clayton Stoner? With Cam Fowler, there's a possibility to get maybe a decent draft pick, a prospect. You know, like, Cam Fowler has value in the trade market.
Yeah, and then they still have Shea Theodore. Like, they've got really well thought of young defensemen that can just step right in there. So,
I mean, if nothing happens where they can alleviate cap space, you know, just throughout the course of the season before having to make a trade. Trading someone like Stoner with Theodore in the pipeline, you know, just clearing cap space might be all they really care about.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing is, although, of course, like, and I got so much blowback on this article from, like, Ducks fans, like, just yelling at me on social media. you know, and of course they don't have to trade Cam Fowler. It just seems like the most logical thing to do.
And his stock is high right now.
His stock is extremely high. I think he has like 2-3 goals already. And look, he's not a bad defenseman. I don't think he's worth nearly the money they're paying him, but he is a guy who has those qualities that teams like. He can skate, he can move the puck, he sort of has that offensive mindset, and like that, those are attractive qualities for teams who might not pay attention to him quite as much. So anyway, it seems like they're going to trade him, and like you were saying, they have guys like Shea Theodore, Brandon Montour, and Jacob Larson in the pipeline. So there's really no reason to not trade Cam Fowler, it seems. But yeah, and even like Clayton Stoner, like, you know, just dump the salary. Like, they could just keep Fowler. Like, that's not a bad outcome, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Ducks, they made a nice step forward. I really, there was a period in time where I thought there was a chance maybe Lindholm wasn't coming back.
I mean, it seemed, this is a magic trick. Like, yeah. It just did not seem like this was possible.
Well, I mean, it sort of makes sense to me because Lindholm doesn't really do any of the things that, okay, this is sound kind of weird, but he doesn't really do any of the things that get defensemen paid. He doesn't lay out big body checks. He doesn't have the booming slap shot. He's not really like a Cam Fowler type skater. He doesn't do anything that's like highlight reel worthy, so to speak. But he just consistently gets the puck from his end to the other end, funnels offense, you know, is great positionally in his own end, and just has a good mind for the game and has, you know, good wrist shot from the point. But none of those things really stand out. And so, and that is still how GMs evaluate players to a pretty large degree. They don't really look at the analytics. So,
you know exactly who this sounds like.
Who?
Is Nick Lidstrom.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, yeah. Who, you know, is at least one of like the five best defensemen ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Ever.
Yeah. He's just like that quiet, unassuming defenseman who just does everything right, basically.
Yeah.
But I think in the NHL, GMs still value. And look, this isn't like to jab at Aaron Ekblad or anything. Like, he's a great defenseman in his own right. But he has more of those qualitative abilities that GMs sort of look at.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, size.
He's easier to quantify and put a number on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So tangible things like size and, you know, grit.
But it's a great thing for the Ducks because, I mean, look, to have a guy of Hampus Lindholm's quality at $5.25 million is incredibly, incredibly valuable.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
Yeah. So anyway, I think the Ducks took a step forward with this move. We'll see. There's still some action coming, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely not over. A team who it might be over for, the Los Angeles Kings. They've had, obviously, an incredible run since 2012, capturing two Stanley Cups in that time span. But it seems like, is the clock running out a little bit on the Kings dynasty?
So they started off, like, 0-3-1 or something, and I think now they're right around 500. But both goalies got hurt. Jonathan Quick is hurt. Jeff Zatkoff is hurt.
Yeah.
So
they're playing Peter Budaj.
Well, who's better than Zatkoff?
Who's better than Zatkoff, but like was in the AHL last year?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm not, I like Peter Budaj, but it's just not the guy you want to be leaning on if you're trying to win a Stanley Cup.
He's literally their only hope right now. He's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And, you know, I think the Kings, although, look, we talked about it over the summer, they still have a great collection of talent. Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, you know, Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, Jake Muzzin, but the depth, you know, they're sort of victims of their own success. It's sort of that's the recipe in the cap era where you get really good, you have to pay the guys, and then you sort of lose in the margins. Like we're seeing it with the Chicago Blackhawks as well.
Yeah. So I just think the goaltending thing is really fascinating because they're going to have to do something.
Yeah.
And they're kind of reverse Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh sort of has nothing but goalies and LA has no goalies. So I don't know. I'm just kind of fascinated by what they're going to do to fill that role. And I know there are cap implications.
Yeah. And what's interesting for the Kings is how long do they wait this out? Because this is a team firmly in win now mode. Like there's no reason for them to take the long view and be like, you know, we're just going to wait it out and see what happens because, you know, like we're still developing whatever. Like their guys are in their primes. There's no reason to wait anymore. So I don't know how long they're going to wait with like Peter Budaj, but you know, maybe pick up the phone and call Philadelphia, see if one of Mason or Neuwirth, you know, are on the trading block. Like I don't know, or maybe even Winnipeg,
yeah,
who has two young goaltenders, and you know, like one has to go eventually. I think if I were in Dean Lombardi's shoes, I would definitely be, you know, kicking the tires on a young goaltender to bring in. And that's the tricky thing is, do you bring in a guy who's really good, you know, like a Neuwirth or, you know, possibly a Hutchinson. And then all of a sudden when Quick comes back, it's like, what do you really do? They're in a weird spot with that goaltending situation.
Yeah. And then I've heard Pavlik's name out there too, but the thing is they just need a goalie that can hold them over. They don't, because right now they kind of don't even really have that.
I think you get someone like, you know, Thomas Greiss.
Yeah, you know, yeah, possibly. So, yeah,
someone who's really more of a backup, but you know,
but is, can it, hold good down enough. That. Yeah, yeah. And the thing with the Kings is, although they're so good at 5-on-5, they don't really have the scoring depth to mitigate the fact that if they don't play a strong offensive game on any given night, it could cost them because they don't really have the goalie to sort of win it for them. You know, I still think, I actually think that they're still like the best in like shot attempt percentage per game, but they just don't really have that scoring depth anymore. And they've never been a team that has a high shooting percentage. You know, they don't really generate chances like a Pittsburgh. So they actually kind of need a goalie who's pretty good.
Yeah, and to get to your point about how patient can they afford to be, I know it's still really early in the season and you don't want to press a panic button, but there are teams passing them. Like Edmonton is, I think, 6-1.
Yeah, they're first in the Pacific.
Yeah, and then San Jose, who plays tonight, I think is 4-3. And
oh, wait, are the Sharks playing the Kings tonight?
No.
Columbus.
Oh, yeah, Columbus is doing their road swing in California because they're playing the Ducks on Friday.
LA's playing the Preds.
Okay, yeah, and the Preds played Anaheim last night. So, yeah. Yeah, so I think with the Kings, it's going to be interesting because this is really... I mean, this isn't their last hurrah.
No.
They still have a couple good more years, but they really, as far as this season goes, they don't have the depth, I think, to contend with potentially the Nashvilles or the Washingtons, although everything's up in the air right now.
Yeah, yeah. Like the NHL, if you sort of look at the standings, you know, there are teams at the top that, you know, you wouldn't think would be there, and the teams at the bottom that you also wouldn't think would be there. And yeah,
everything is weird.
Yeah, we're just sort of waiting for the 20-game mark to see what the teams really are.
Yeah, exactly. If there's one team that we know who they really are, it's the San Jose Sharks. I think honestly that they're the class of the NHL right now. I don't think there's a team that's better. We said so in our predictions, and judging from what I've seen from them, watching their games, looking at the stats, going to a game, I think this is still the best team in the National Hockey League.
Man, and you might say, looking at their record, well, they're 4-3. Like, how can you say that? They had a clunker against the Rangers where they allowed 7 goals.
Yeah, which is not going to happen.
Which isn't going to happen, even though New York actually looks really good right now.
Yeah.
And everyone is already pressing the panic button about the power play because it hasn't been consistently good. But
all they need is Brent Burns at the point, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, there's just too much skill going on there. So anyone that's worried about the power play, of all things, I think is just not a patient person.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the Sharks have the fourth most shot attempts per 60 minutes in the NHL right now. So yeah. I think their process is doing just fine.
Yeah, we see this happen all the time where you play really, really well and still don't get the results, but it's not going to last that way. If you keep, I know it's cliche, but you stick with that process. If the process is good, which it is, it's going to translate to wins.
Here's a fun little game. So I said the Sharks are fourth in shot attempts per 60 at even strength. This is fun with like small sample sizes. Who are the two teams ahead of them? So second and third in the NHL.
Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto's second.
And then
you looked at my screen. Didn't
no,
you?
No, I
really?
Swear to God. No,
oh, okay.
Swear to God.
Okay.
No, I'm a savant. I'm just really good.
Joe, any ganders?
I'm only saying this because I looked at the power play percentages.
Well, this is even strength.
Yeah, I know, but okay. I'm still sort of going.
Although I guess there's some correlation. Maybe.
Yeah, the team that's sticking in my mind that I know is not correct, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway because I can use a laugh. Columbus.
No.
Yeah.
No. Although it does start with a C.
Columbus.
Colorado.
They're 5-for-10 on the power play.
Oh, okay.
I think.
So they've had 10 power plays in 6 games? That doesn't seem great.
No, it doesn't.
That doesn't seem great at all.
Especially considering that I think there's some teams that already have 10 power play goals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Carolina Hurricanes. Yeah, and this shouldn't really be too surprising because the Hurricanes have generally been near the top or at least in the top 10 in terms of shot attempts or shot attempt differential the last couple seasons. And would you look at that? They're also, like, I think 30th in even strength save percentage. Hello, Cam Ward. Nice to see you.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Good to see your media expectations yet again.
Yeah.
So, is this a secret tank by the Hurricanes? Because you know they're a smart organization. Like they're an analytics driven organization. Don't they have to kind of realize that Cam Ward is not good anymore and kind of hasn't been for a long time?
You know what?
Like, isn't that a bit of a sneaky tank?
You might be right. It sounds
it's kind of hard to fathom that they've hung on to him for this long
without some sort of plan.
Yeah.
The weird thing with that, though, to me is just that, and you know, like other people have talked about this, but like they have some attendance issues, and for them making the playoffs would be really big. So it seems like they'd have everything to gain by being good now.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the secret tank plan is, I'm not sure like what's going on with that. But anyway,
has Eddie Lack been playing at all?
I don't know. I mean, neither of them are that good.
Yeah.
At least I don't know. But yeah, so going back to the Sharks, I think to me the Sharks are still the best team. I think the numbers kind of bear that out a little bit. And look, they're just so deep. Like, just watching Joe Thornton play at the age, he's like 39 now?
37.
Oh, 37?
37.
I thought he was 39. He's still amazing, you know, and everyone on that team looks pretty good. And I think, you know, David Schlemko, I mean, you guys can probably speak to this more than I can.
Yeah, I'm more impressed with him every game he plays. And we touched on him last time in the casual NHL 17 podcast, but his patience with the puck at the point where, you know, he's willing to make that play where he holds on to it a second longer and he'll move his feet laterally to get to the middle up high and then cut back and make a play is just something that outside of Brent Burns you don't see from Sharks defensemen that often. So just his creativity and the patience that he has to wait an extra second to maintain possession and set up a play rather than just chip the puck down low and hope that someone gets it back, I think is huge for them. And I said it last time, there's still those times when you see some very not good turnovers just because of lack of chemistry with his teammates. There was a play in the
last... like he's turning it over?
Where he's turning it over.
Okay, yeah.
Because, for example, there was a play one or two games ago where he was in the right corner to the right of Martin Jones in the defensive zone. And I think maybe Joe Thornton curled for the puck, but he curled, I think, maybe a little sooner or at a different angle than Schlemko expected. And Schlemko ended up passing directly to someone on the other team.
Yeah.
That's stuff that's not going to happen all season. It's just a matter of getting used to everyone else's tendencies.
Yeah.
So I'm not concerned about the negatives that I've seen from him, which have been pretty few and far between. I'm just more excited about what we're seeing with the way he moves the puck. It's just, like I said, outside of Brent Burns, it's a rarity for San Jose defensemen.
Are you equally impressed by Schlemko?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Nick. You know, there have been a few, you probably would call them mistakes, but again, it's just getting used to a new team. And, you know, like Nick said, they're not going to be there all season long. So, yeah, what he's brought to them so far has definitely been an upgrade. And, you know, anything that you might criticize him for thus far will not be glaring by the end of even the regular season.
Because you hear about this where a new player, it can take like 20 or so games to just get used to the new system and the new teammates. So if we were still seeing weird turnovers like that 20 games from now, I'd be pretty surprised.
Yeah, but I mean, also, I think one thing you have to consider with puck-moving defensemen like Schlemko is that those mistakes are going to happen just because they're trying to make plays almost every time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like it's not like a Roman Polak where you never really see the mistake, although, you know, maybe there are some glaring mistakes with Polak, but like just chipping it out consistently out into the neutral zone with no control, giving back to the other team, giving them another chance to come back into the zone over and over, that hurts you way more than trying to make a play every time, and every now and again a turnover happens, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, if he's making turnovers, like, that'll happen, and I think you guys make good points, but I think I wouldn't really be too worried about it because it's, if anything, it's a good sign that he's trying to make plays as opposed to, you know, literally just giving it back to the other team every single time.
Yeah, I agree. Like, they're maintaining possession when he has a puck rather than just creating a 50-50 battle and hoping that they win it.
Yeah, because you just trust that the guy with the puck on that breakout is looking to make the best play possible.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like, it's like quarterbacks in football, they go through their progressions, you know, and you trust that with Schlemko, he's seeing every option, or at least most options, whereas a Polak, you know, if he doesn't see a guy wide open and right in front of him, he's just chipping it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it the other team has it again, or you're engaging in a foot race for the puck in the neutral zone, and then that takes a toll on your guys. They have to win those battles to maintain possession. Like, this is, I mean, like, having a puck moving defenseman is a big deal when you're upgrading from a guy like Polak.
Yeah, and it's a great point too, because something that I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't know more about him, considering that he played for Arizona. So in the same division as San Jose.
He played for Arizona?
He did.
Oh, yeah. I always thought they got him from New Jersey, right?
They got him from New Jersey.
Yeah, okay.
But he spent some time in Arizona, and not only can he pass the puck well, but he skates it well through the neutral zone too.
Yeah, he just looks like because I was trying to watch him like more closely when I was at the game. Like, he just looks like he's like that guy when you go to like a pickup hockey game who's just kind of like not really the flashy guy, but just kind of does everything well enough. He's like the guy you want on your team because you know he's going to pass it to you and get it to you on your tape.
Yeah, and he's out there trying stuff.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Like, it's he checks out in pretty much every regard.
Yeah,
this might be the Dylan Schlemko podcast.
Yeah, we have our title, the David Schlemko podcast.
Yeah. Oh, did I say Dylan Schlemko?
You said Dylan.
You're thinking Dylan DeMello.
Oh,
or Brendan Dillon.
Yeah, there's too many.
There's a lot of Dillons going around.
There's too much Dylan. It's like the San Francisco Giants of the Brandons and the San Jose Sharks of the Dillons.
Yes.
All right, well, let's head up north a little bit. California, obviously, it's a bit of a mixed bag right now. I think the only team that we can safely say is making the playoffs is the Sharks. I think if I had to bet on it right now, I wouldn't bet on the Ducks making the playoffs. You know, much to Joe's delight. and then LA, although I still think they're capable and they'll probably turn it around, or, you know, not turn it around, but like survive whatever it is they're going through. It's still up in the air. You know, it seems like it's going to be a dogfight for those last two positions in the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the team that's on top of the Pacific Division right now, the Edmonton Oilers, sitting at 6-1.
6-1.
A team that we've talked about. This might be like one of the teams we talk about the most, I feel like.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good because people care about the Oilers. Like, they're always giving us stuff to talk about. I think the last time we had a podcast, or I think, well, two podcasts ago, the last time we talked about the Oilers, it was after that controversy with McClellan benching Pouliot, them having violating the CBA and having a practice on a rest day.
The three games in podcast.
And I think ever since then, they haven't lost.
Yeah.
So.
And Pouliot has made some nice plays.
Yeah, and Connor McDavid continues to establish his dominance as one of the, like, I don't know, two best players in the league.
Yeah.
Like, I still think maybe it's a little early to say he's better than Crosby.
Yeah.
Just based on, like, resume. Mm. But he's certainly in the two, three best players in the league, I think.
Yeah. He has stupid skill. that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm still mesmerized by his skating.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Every time I watch him, you know, he's got the fastest feet in the league, and he's also got the fastest hands,
and
that's a combination you never see.
And the puck isn't a weight for him. Like, it doesn't, like, slow him down at all when he carries it.
You know what it looks like when Connor McDavid is stick handling? It looks like when, like, you know, and I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but like, you're just messing around, you don't have a puck on your stick, and you're just kind of like fake stick handling.
Yeah.
And you're stick handling faster than you'll ever stick handle with an actual puck on your stick. He does that, but with the puck on his stick.
Yeah.
It's insane how fast his hands are.
Yeah. I don't know. Whoever his coaches were growing up, get in touch with your boy. Like, get in touch with me.
Yeah. Make me better in beer league.
Yeah. What did I do wrong all these years?
Yeah. But Edmonton is still not. It's still tough to really trust what they've accomplished so far. They're, like, you know, below average in shot attempts per 60 right now. So they're not really driving play all that well. And I don't know. Do you guys really trust this roster still in an 82-game sample?
Not the defense.
Yeah.
Or the goaltending.
Yeah. But you know, at the same time, I think in this division, having a guy like Connor McDavid might be good enough to drag you into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I still think it's early to say that. I mean, it's early to say anything. But I have liked some of what I've seen from the Oilers so far. I think, again, just McDavid. It's as simple as that, really. Yeah. Because they've done everything else pretty much wrong for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, they're so talented up front that, you know, like you said, that could be enough to where they can just outscore teams and win games and then get in. But they still definitely have holes on the back end, and I feel like I don't want to say the bottom is going to drop out of the team completely, but I just think that the standings are going to start to reflect the fact that they have those holes.
Yeah, it's going to level out for sure. Joe, how confident are you that these Oilers can... I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting them to maintain this torrid pace, but do you think that they're playoff bound? I mean, you don't have to make a prediction, but, you know,
I mean,
give me something here.
They could be. Everyone knows about their offense. You know, defensively is a lot to be desired. Goaltending, average at best.
Yeah.
And, you know, before the season, I was picking Calgary over Anaheim for that third spot.
Yeah.
With L.A. possibly, you know, being on shaky ground, Anaheim not looking like they're going to be very good. Calgary also not looking like they're going to be very good.
They might be worse than they were.
Yeah.
Which is, like, hard to fathom.
Yeah, like, you know, I was expecting their coaching to be at least somewhat average, and maybe they're still just taking a little bit of time to get used to the new coach, but they don't look great. So Edmonton might be able to sneak in there at the third spot, you know, just on offense alone.
Yeah, I mean, the troubling thing with Edmonton is that they're, like, 25th in shot attempts against per 60.
I mean, we saw it last year with Dallas.
Calgary's, like, 20th or something. So
Dallas
last
year, like, they did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, and you could almost argue, I mean, you could maybe make a case that this Oilers forward group is up there with Dallas's forward group a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no, you could totally make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, especially with all the injuries that the Stars have had. Yeah. I think the other day they were missing, like, was it Sharp, Spezza? Were they missing Sagan or Ben? It was one of those two.
Sagan, I think, scored the other day.
Their lineup looked like just like a Frankenstein of what it actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I would like to see Edmonton make the playoffs. It'd be fun, but I don't know. The way their defense has been kind of porous, it's not really all that inspiring, but then again, you look at the competition, you look at the field that they're really going up against, and it's like, well...
There's a chance.
There's a chance. And with Calgary, it's the same old story. You know, they just... obviously, they upgraded with Brian Elliott, but they're still bad defensively.
Yeah.
Or they just allow so many shots against, and they don't really generate all that well. So, I mean, maybe it'll turn around again. Like, it's so early in the season, but...
Because it's not like they have bad defensemen. It's just they play bad defense.
They have, like, I think all of us were really, in the summer, unsure what to make of Glenn Gullitson. But so far, I think there is no argument to be made that he's an upgrade on Hartley,
the
previous coach.
Which is kind of hard to not be an upgrade on Hartley.
Yeah, he's Hartley an upgrade.
Oh, nice. Can I get a high five? High five. Nice job.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's
put that on to the next.
Let's move to another Canadian club, a team that I was really high on over the summer, the Winnipeg Jets. Another team where it's the same old story. Goaltending is once again submarining this team. They also haven't been very good at 5-on-5, which is sort of weird considering that that's sort of been their calling card the last couple of years. But I think it's really troubling that neither Hellebuyck or Hutchinson has shown so far.
Shined? I think shined.
It's shined.
Has shined yet, because, you know, everyone thought, okay, like they dropped Pavlik to the minors. This is finally the year where they're going to get the goaltending. We know they're good at 5-on-5. They're going to be great. Hasn't been the case so far, but something tells me that it'll turn around. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean...
Patrick Laine?
He has 5 goals, I think.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Scheifele and Wheeler are great. Tyler Myers scored again today.
Really?
Yeah. He looks good.
Yeah. So, I'm optimistic on the Jets.
Yeah.
I don't know. Joe, any Jets thoughts?
I mean, you think with, you know, their forward group that, you know, they'd be able to turn around and, you know, Bufflin on the back end. They have a good roster, and, you know, Paul Maurice is a good coach. You know, it's just, you know, finding a little more stability in the goaltending area.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Hutchinson hasn't played a little better.
Yeah, we'll see.
I really thought that they would be better just by virtue of not playing Pavlik.
Right.
But that hasn't been the case.
All right. Well, let's get to what I really want to talk about that I've been waiting for this entire show.
Ooh, I already know what it is.
The Montreal Canadiens.
Your Montreal Canadiens.
Undefeated in regulation. Much like the start of the 2015-16 season, they're 6-0-1. Or did they lose yesterday? Yeah. No, they won yesterday. Yeah, they're 6-0-1. They're playing right now, or the game might be over against Tampa Bay.
They won 3-1.
Today?
Yeah.
Oh, you spoiled it for me. Damn it. I was recording it. It's okay.
Spoiler alert. So now
they're 7-0-1. This team is historically good. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, this team is historically Shea Weber.
It reminds me so much of last season because it started off the same way.
It's not quite the same, I would say. This last season when they started, they were very good at even strength. They were controlling play. They were winning the shot attempt battle. This season, their defense has been troubling. Like, they've struggled to find a consistent pairings. Like, they've really been... Like, right now, they have Alexei Yemelin and Shea Weber skating together, which surprisingly has been pretty good.
Really?
Somehow. Some way, somehow.
I am surprised.
That's turned out pretty well.
Will it last?
No.
We'll see. I don't know. Like, it's... Weird shit is happening in the NHL right now. But,
There's something in the water, or the Gatorade.
But the story of the season, to me, for the Canadiens, has been Alexander Radulov. The way he's come in, and he's established himself as one of the best forwards in the team. He's really been driving, you know, that offense from the second line. You know, obviously Gallagher, Galchenyuk, Pacioretty have been good, but really Radulov has given them that bona fide second line with Tomáš Plekanec and rookie Arturi Lehkonen, and which wasn't really totally expected. No one really knew what to expect from Radulov. There was a question of, will he be able to adapt back to the NHL? Will he care enough? You know, there's always that Russian factor. But I got to tell you, I don't think anyone cares more about winning hockey games on that team than Alexander Radulov. Have you seen him celebrate goals?
It's PK Subban-esque, if you will.
It's PK Subban times like 500.
Yeah.
And not only that, but every, like, he's a tenacious forechecker. I didn't know that about him. I always assumed, okay, skilled Russian guy.
Oh, no. You should have seen him when he was with Nashville.
I didn't know that about him. And he's, like, I swear, he's the hardest worker on every shift. Like, he just outworks you in pretty much every area of the ice.
Yeah, this comes as no surprise to us. He was a menace with Nashville.
Like, he's legitimately good.
Yeah.
Oh, no, there was never any doubt that he's a very good hockey player.
Yeah.
The only reason why I ever harp on him is because he's not afraid of being dirty. And I'm waiting for that shoe to drop this season.
Yeah, he has done some questionable stuff, you know, in the past in the KHL. Haven't seen that yet. I don't know. I think he's like, some of the like questionable plays he makes sort of stem from just like his rageful like enthusiasm for the game. And that can, you know, it's like your biggest strength can also be your biggest weakness. And for him, it can kind of go both ways. But, you know, in terms of just playing hockey so far, I got to say I'm thoroughly impressed. Like, he does everything for this team.
Yeah, and it just makes their lineup stretch out even more, him and Lehkonen.
Yeah, and Lehkonen is also, it's funny, with Lehkonen, I see him a little bit as like a Brendan Gallagher light a little bit. He's not nearly as, like, talented, but he's just got that good, like, sort of tenacious approach to the game. He's got some nifty hands. Like, he's just a good, like, small area player.
Yeah.
And he's got some wheels, and he's good defensively, so.
And you only want to slap him. You don't want to punch him.
Like Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah, exactly.
Gallagher's off to a good start. I want to ask, has Max Pacioretty the apparent worst captain ever in Habs history or something?
Yeah. Michel Therrien is up to his old tricks again, moving Max Pacioretty down to the third line with David Desharnais and Andrew Shaw.
What?
Like, can you imagine any other team doing that, moving their captain on the third line? But I think part of it is he's trying to rekindle that, like, Desharnais-Pacioretty connection from, like, 5 years ago. And then Paul Byron has played really well. I think he has, like, he might have 4 goals by now, or maybe 3.
What?
He's been scoring a lot, and so they have Byron up with Galchenyuk and Gallagher.
Whatever.
Mitchell's been scoring also, so they're getting some depth contribution throughout the line.
Yeah, they've had, like, I've actually been really impressed by their fourth line with Philip Danault, who they got from in the Dale Weiss Tomáš Fleischmann trade last trade deadline. And I always kind of thought, like, early on, he's just like just another fourth line forward, but he's actually like a good depth guy. So anyway, they've had contributions from pretty much every line. Carey Price is back. Al Montoya, backup goaltender, looks really good,
playing well.
Yeah, I think he could be a starter on some teams, honestly. Yeah,
I believe you called that.
A few teams, yeah.
Like L.A.
Yeah.
Or Boston.
L.A. would look great, yeah.
Yeah. Man, dude.
Surprisingly, like, there's a lot of goaltending issues around the league.
And not a lot of free goaltenders.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about this, but like Malcolm Subban for a first round draft pick.
I didn't watch. What happened?
Well, I only saw the highlights, and I think the big thing was that the headlines all say Subban gets yanked, Subban didn't play well. Subban got no defensive help in front of him.
So he played bad one game, and now he's like the biggest flop ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
runs the family,
but,
huh?
But the thing yeah. is...
Still waiting on Jordan Subban.
Yeah. The thing is, Malcolm Subban was a first-round draft pick, and has gotten two career starts and was yanked in both of them.
Yeah, clearly he's terrible.
Clearly terrible. Clearly a terrible decision was made.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness...
Well, don't draft goalies in the first round, like, first of all. Don't do that.
Yeah, yeah, unless they're Carey Price.
There's no point, yeah. Unless they turn out to be, like, the best of their generation or whatever.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, I don't know. They played McIntyre yesterday. And
yeah, Zane McIntyre.
Zane McIntyre, not Zane Malik.
I watch a lot of hockey. I've never heard of that guy's name.
No, neither have I.
Ever.
I it's a good thing I wasn't broadcasting that game for many reasons, but chief among them is because every time I like started to say his name in my head, it came out as Zane Malik,
and that
would have been not good.
I just thought Drew McIntyre. I thought that's who it was at first, or McIntyre. I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's McIntyre.
But he was like... That's a minor league goalie. So I just assumed that it was Drew McIntyre.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys know who that is.
No.
I'm pretty well read on like...
You are.
I thought I was pretty well read on minor league goalies. But anyway.
But not minor league goalies named Zane.
Yeah, apparently not. And wasn't there someone else they played?
There
was like a guy between Subban and McIntyre.
Khudobin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the deal with Rask? Is he out?
He's supposed to be back in, I think, just a few games, and then Khudobin is going to be out for longer. So the thing was, if Subban or McIntyre can play well, then they don't need to go out and get an insurance policy for when Rask or if Rask goes down again.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Subban struggled in his game, and then McIntyre looked good for one period. So I don't know. It's kind of the same thing with LA, except not quite as bad because Rask is still going to be there. But you're hearing like Mike Condon's name thrown out.
God, you're in a bad spot if Mike Condon is the answer to your goaltending problems.
But people are talking about him like he's a good option.
I mean, I think he's better than what he showed last year because I think that Canadiens team kind of gave up with like 2 months left in the season because they just knew they were out. Maybe not 2 months, maybe like a month. But I don't know. I feel like it's bad news if you're leaning on Mike Condon to bail you out.
No, that's accurate. But the thing is, the good news is that Rask is supposed to be back soon.
Yeah. Well, since we're in the Atlantic Division, RIP Northeast Division, RIP Vine.
RIP Vine, rest in peace. Pour one out for Vine.
but yeah.
This will have an effect on your Twitter feed, but anyway.
The Detroit Red Wings, Andreas Athanasiou. That guy is freaking good.
Really good at
hockey. Have you seen these goals?
Yeah.
He just like punished Martin Jones with like a beautiful slap shot.
Yo,
bar down.
That shot hurt my feelings.
And then did you see the wrist shot he had in the slot where he did like three pump fakes and then just roofed it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so, before he scored that goal against San Jose, he had a really silky toe drag around, I think, Paul Martin, just a few minutes into the first period. So why he doesn't get more ice time and why he's even been a healthy scratch this season is beyond me.
I think that'll change because once you start putting the puck in the net, it gets harder to justify not, you know, getting ice time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, especially the way he's scoring.
Yeah.
These, like, you don't bench guys who do that.
Yeah.
You just don't.
You typically don't.
You shouldn't.
He's like the home run hitter that hits, like, 500-foot home runs. He's not getting cheated. Like, none of these are cheap, greasy, like...
Yeah.
Like lucky goals.
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of random, but what do you guys think of Paul Martin since you brought him up?
I don't have a problem with Paul Martin. I like Paul Martin.
Okay. I was just curious because I've heard some rumblings.
No, I saw.
From where?
The usual suspects.
The usual suspects.
The usual suspects of Sharks Twitter.
I'm going to say it with my eyes.
I see.
Yeah, that guy.
Some media people that, you know, we've known.
I saw that headline. And look, I haven't looked into like the advanced analytics of,
I don't think it's even analytics based. Yeah. I think it's just perhaps not being wise.
Yeah, because, I mean...
I'm choosing my words carefully.
Because I've watched every game that they've played so far, and it's... I don't see anything different from last season. And, yeah, he's still playing with Brent Burns, and he's still the perfect complement for Brent Burns.
Oh, that's another guy who looked gigantic in person.
Yeah.
Brent Burns.
Yeah, he's bigger than Joe Thornton.
Yeah, oh, man, when they enter that offensive zone, like just, you know, like on a rush, man, I would be terrified if that was like the goalie. It's like, where do I look? Who do I pay attention to? Oh, pucks in the net. You know, just like it's insane.
Something that I was curious to see was after last year, because I know Burns has been an all-star in the past, but last year really felt like it was his breakout party. And so I was thinking, I wonder if he's going to have as easy of a time getting shots through this season. And he has not had a hard time at all.
Well, because he just does it so often.
Yeah.
It's like, does a player really want to get in his way, like, you know, 20 times a game and, like, you know, get hurt?
Yeah. And I shouldn't say that it's been easy, because he just makes hard things look easy, like skating laterally to open up a shooting lane, or those subtle little toe drags or heel drags to change the angle. Or
I think he's an underrated passer too.
Yeah.
He makes some really nice, like, sort of cross ice, like diagonal passes from the point. He made a couple in that Ducks game that I was like, wow. Like, he just saw that seam and just hit it right away.
Yeah. It's an underrated part of his game for sure. But he's a complete package. And then I still think he and Paul Martin are really good together. So any notion that Paul Martin should be benched or something, mm-hmm. I think is stupid.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a Sharks game to watch. I think it's 7:29.
We do.
Puck drop is in like about a minute. I feel like we've talked about the things that matter to us.
We have.
The National Hockey League. Anything else? I know, Joe, you wanted to talk about a quick thing.
I do want to talk about that thing real fast.
Okay.
That thing.
So a couple days ago, right, 2 days ago?
Yeah, like two or three.
When Buffalo played Philadelphia, yeah, the Sabres are up
3-1.
Yeah, 3-1 with, you know, 5 minutes left around there in the game, and Dmitry Kulikov takes a charging penalty against Jakub Voracek and hits him high, knocks off his helmet, just completely levels him.
It was like a video game.
Yeah,
it looked like NFL Blitz when a guy's helmet goes flying off.
And 2 minutes for charging, and I think that was it.
That was it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Voracek, you know, he was on the bench, got pulled from the game because the spotters said, no, this guy needs to go to the quiet room for 10 minutes. And so he had to miss the rest of the third period, and I think he missed most of the overtime, but I think I saw him out there. And Voracek ended up scoring the winner in the shootout.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, you know, he was able to come back.
Yeah.
But I started wondering, are we going to see the enforcers of the league, you know, the guys that don't really matter to their team, taking runs at, not necessarily, you know, dirty plays, but, you know.
I think that's always been the case.
Yeah, but, you know, hitting the star players harder in close games in the third period because it knows that they're going to have you take out the game for 10 minutes.
I mean, I think that's always been the case, you know, like Matt Cooks, you know, even like the Andrew Shaws, you know, it's just that's their role.
I think the main point that
they're
getting...
They're like kamikazes.
The main point that you're getting at, though, is if there are these, like, independent spotters that are saying, no, that guy has to go to the quiet room. Like, these are not team doctors. These are, like
league representatives
that aren't affiliated with the teams.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah, well... It's good in terms of...
It's better to have a third party than a team doctor because there's more conflict of interest.
But so it's good from that regard, but it's bad from the sense that, okay, players like Kulikov might think, okay, if I take a run at this guy or maybe cheap shot him and then some independent party says he has to go to the quiet room, well, that's a win for my team.
Yeah.
It turned out to not be a win because Philadelphia scored on the power play a couple times and ended up winning the game. But
Kulikov doesn't really have a history of that, so
I'm not getting at
that
Kulikov.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically, I'm thinking our
anyone,
you know, less skilled players go take note and go after the skilled players, you know, again, and not necessarily cheap shotting them, but, you know, hitting them a little harder and maybe a little higher in order to get them out of the game in a close game in the last 10 minutes.
I mean, I think that's an age-old thing, you know, like, if you're the best player, you get targeted.
But these guys, they if they now have to be taken out.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they go back to the bench and shake it off.
But if they're not concussed, they're going to come back. So, but yeah, I get your point, though.
Yeah, and they'll come back if there's time left in the game.
I think the protocol, I mean, regardless, it just has to be there. But I think, yeah, maybe people take advantage of it. But I don't know. It's interesting. I don't really have a great answer.
And we don't have answers, you know, yeah, because it's, you know, remain to be seen.
It's kind of hard to explain idiocy. So
it is. Hopefully it doesn't happen. You know, alone being an abuse of a rule, it would definitely take away from, you know, the quality of the game.
Well, the worst thing is if guys started, like, taking advantage of that, let's say, and then they, like, stopped doing the quiet room thing or, you know.
Yeah.
That would never happen, but it's not out of the realm of possibility with the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that does it.
Yeah.
That's it for us.
We're good.
All right.
I'm going to go to my quiet room.
You're going to go to your quiet room. We're going to go watch the Sharks. Guys, thank you for listening to our return episode to the Garage. Another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. You can... We're not on SoundCloud yet.
Yeah, that needs to happen.
Is that...
I'm going to make that happen.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll keep you updated on that. As always, we appreciate a 5-star rating and review because it helps people find the show on iTunes. Guys, holler at us at Garage Hockey Pod on Twitter. But until next time, thanks for listening.